Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from St. Augustine, Florida. Welcome to the show, Brett Swartz.
Victor, thanks for having me on the show. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you here again. It's been a while since you were last on the show. And my gosh, market conditions have changed tremendously. We're going to talk about tax and all kinds of things related to that. But maybe before we do, for the folks who haven't met you, why don't you take a moment and give a little bit of your backstory, how you got to this point in your journey?
Yeah, my journey to real estate started at a young age. My parents in the Bay Area of California building single family homes and having rentals. So I grew up loving and learning about real estate at a young age and wanted to always be in it somehow, some way. But my dad told me, instead of just, you know, swinging the hammer and building the homes, why don't you go and get an education? And so that's part of what my mom and dad instilled in me at a young age. And so my brother and I were the first to graduate college from either side of the family. And during that time, I had a chance to study and practice multifamily brokerage at a place called Marcus & Millichap, where I learned about multifamily investing and, you know, cash flow and IRRs and underwriting and negotiating and all of those fun things about putting deals together on the brokerage side. And that flew, that kind of naturally moved into helping people defer capital gains tax when we came up limitations with the 1031 exchange. And so fast forward now, we offer something that helps people defer tax, not using a 1031 exchange, and it works for any asset of any kind. And it provides some of the freedoms that a lot of people are looking for, especially in times like this.
One of the limitations of the 1031, and it's statutory. I mean, 1031 has been around a long time. I want to say it dates back to the 1920s, if I remember correctly, is the statutory requirement to identify the replacement property within 45 days and to close on that replacement asset within 180 days. And if you can't find an asset to meet your criteria, you're either buying a substandard asset, maybe taking a significant downgrade, or paying the tax. And a lot of people don't see a third alternative, which potentially does exist.
You're exactly right. And not only that, but remember too, 1031 exchange has been limited over the years, and now it only applies to investment real estate. So if you're selling highly appreciated stock, cryptocurrency, primary homes, or a business, the 1031 exchange is not an option. And so you want to make sure, A, that the asset you're selling and the strategy you're using can work together. But then you're right. If you are in investment real estate, the biggest challenge right now is, you know, a year ago, you had a reverse of interest rates versus cap rates, meaning you had a lower interest rate and a higher cap rate, where now we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing interest rates that are higher than cap rates. Sellers looking at situations where they say, I have fixed debt. Why do I want a 1031 and have higher debt? And prices that are honestly kind of remaining not too far off yet. You know, we'll see what happens here as these rates start to adjust, for especially some of these syndications that have been put together with caps that have been exceeded or expired. But that's the situation we're in. Then you add the actual demographics of the baby boomers and the largest wealth transfer in the history of the planet, which is now estimated to be $84 trillion. A lot of baby boomers aren't wanting or willing to go through another market cycle or correction that could take many years and have more debt, less flexibility, and less of the freedoms they desire. And so we really try to focus on providing something that's it's transformational versus just transactional. And that's our focus here with Capital Gains Tax Solutions.
So one of the limitations of the 1031, which I think a lot of folks overlook, let's imagine for an example, and I'm just making up this example, correct me if I'm wrong. Let's say you've got $1 million in equity and let's say $2 million in debt on the property that you're disposing of. You have to put $1 million of equity and $2 million of debt to work in the replacement property as well.
You're exactly right. It's equal or greater value of the asset that was sold, and that also includes equal or greater debt. And so it's called a debt replacement requirement. And so you're right. Sometimes you're doubling down. And oftentimes, if you sell a $3 million asset, most of the time, you're not buying exactly three. You're probably buying 3.5 or 4, maybe even 5. And now you're taking on more debt and you get in a situation where if the music stops, like it's, you know, seems to be stopping in a lot of markets in a lot of ways, and not so much for actual rents and occupancies, just more so because of interest rates have been such an influx so fast that you go, am I in a better position that I would have been if I just held onto the property and paid off the debt? And so you're exactly right. You got to be very careful. It's not just about cash flow. It's about tax flow as well as about your debt situation. That's such a big part of this.
So I'm guessing we're going to probably talk about Delaware Statutory Trust. I believe that's one of the different vehicles. There's also opportunity zones that also exist, although they seem to have fallen a little bit in popularity just because the experience with opportunity zones over the last several years has been somewhat mixed for a variety of reasons. Those are a couple that I'm aware of. Are there others?
Yeah, so there's the Delaware Statutory Trust. We like to call it the Delaware 1031. It's part of the 1031 family. Again, works for just investment real estate. Challenges with the Delawares, typically they're illiquid. They're always illiquid. They're typically not diversified, and you give up all control, and it's 5 to 7 years or 7 to 10 years. These properties are beautiful, typically great locations, typically pretty good operators, and also they take on the debt. So they have some definitely some pros, but for the entrepreneur or the person who wants to diversify, who doesn't want to necessarily overpay in a highly priced marketplace with higher debt, we call that the blockbuster solution, you know, to exit planning. The other DST is called the Deferred Sales Trust, and it's our focus and our passion because we think it gives all of the things that the Delaware does not give, such as flexibility with timing, which I think is the most important thing. You can extinguish all of your debt, pay off all of your debt, as long as you don't have debt over basis. You can diversify into other investments, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, but also lending to real estate and or T-bills, which are paying 4 to 5%. But the best thing is you can dollar cost average and you can wait for markets to actually shift. And so we just did a deal in Texas, actually two land sales for over $37 million for a client. And he's been waiting essentially in T-bills and money market accounts for this market to shift. And he's been seeing it for months that it's going to be happening. And now it's really starting to happen at, I guess, a quicker pace. And so he's positioned with the capital to buy hopefully some deals at a discount or at least a better deal than it would have been had he done a 1031 exchange, you know, 6 or 7, 8 months ago. And so these are the key things you really want to clarify. Where do you think the market's at? You know, what's the strategy to help you get there? And then what's the freedom that you're trying to unlock, whether it be an entrepreneurial freedom, you know, dollar cost averaging freedom, a new depreciation freedom, or just getting away from the 1031 altogether, which we found to be sometimes, you know, the blockbuster method of exiting.
Fascinating. So what are some of the features or limitations of the Deferred Sales Trust?
I think the biggest thing is there's a third party unrelated trustee. That's our company that you have to get used to understanding how we all work together. You are not in a unilateral control situation like you would be if you own something. However, you're working and you have indirect control because you are a lender with the trustee and with our company. That being said, nothing ever moves out your approval, or your signature. It goes into investments that you might already buy or own or want to own in the future. So that's not a problem. It's not unlike a 1031 relationship, except think of us more like a long-term 1031. But the first thought for people is, hey, I'm used to owning my investment real estate and doing everything myself when I want, how I want. And it's shifting that mindset to say, now I'm bringing in a team to help me execute this, who happens to love investment real estate and, you know, owns and invests and do all of those things. But it's the lender relationship. Then you can become the owner. So you can partner with the trust, but it's that extra layer. Let's just say you exit on a $10 million asset, you would have paid $3 million of tax. In this scenario, you take back a promissory note for $10 million versus paying the tax at $3 and having $7. But then you can turn around and you can partner with the trust. And so once you understand that next layer, on the onset, you think, well, I'm really just being passive. Well, that's one option. You can certainly be passive and be retired. And some of our clients choose to do that. And then we partner with operators like you, Victor, and go into different deals in different areas and diversify into commercial real estate. Mostly, we love mobile home parks, multifamily, senior housing. We're looking at parking lots more now these days, industrial. But think of it as a way to diversify with passive operators that are managing the trust assets with a third-party trustee, or you can do it yourself. Or you can put it in the S&P 500 and just wait around with liquid investments until deals make sense for you. So it just kind of depends on what you're trying to achieve, but it does take giving up some control, right? And it does take doing something in a different way than the 1031. That's often the biggest thing. Number two would just be the legality. Like people go, well, this seems too good to be true. Seems like there's so much flexibility and so much opportunity. You know, is it legal? Does it actually, you know, have a track record? And it does. It's thousands of closes, billions of assets have used it to sell, 27-year track record and over 24 no change IRS audits. It's batting 1,000 so far, but still it's challenging when people have a thought or a team CPAs that haven't heard of it or haven't used it. And so there's hesitancy, especially if you're exiting a multi-million dollar business, you know, or a real estate asset that someone helped you get there, and now you're entrusting it to a new strategy to them. So there's those are the most common things that we come up against.
Now, trusts are potentially powerful asset protection mechanisms. An irrevocable trust, perhaps the strongest. Does the deferred sales trust also offer an additional layer of asset protection?
That's a great point. It actually does. The neat part about if you don't own the trust, which you don't in this scenario, if someone sues you, they can't take what you don't own. And so it's a layer of asset protection that's naturally built in because you are a lender to the trust. Now, could somebody potentially get a judgment for the income that that is paying you? Sure, that could happen, and that's a part of it. But they couldn't sue the trust. And these trusts are also set up as single entity business trusts. They're never commingled in other business accounts or other trust accounts. And the funds are 24/7 access. You view the funds online, so you have all the protections there. We're typically at Charles Schwab or a TD Ameritrade. But in fact, that asset protection piece is a nice piece. The other piece too is you can get it outside your taxable estate, which the government's biggest mousetrap is the 40% death tax, a part of this $84 trillion that's transferring. You want to have a plan beyond just the stepped up basis 1031 swap until you drop, which is what most of us have been taught, which is a great way to build wealth. I love 1031 exchanges. We still do them if and when the deals make sense and if it makes sense for your freedoms that you really desire. And if you do pass away, your kids can get a stepped up basis and basically essentially eliminate that capital gains tax. But guess what? That estate tax is still a part of it. And those exemptions are dropping to, you know, from 24 million essentially married to 12 in the next couple of years. And I was talking with a gentleman yesterday in Newport Beach. He is single and he owns a $27 million free and clear asset right on the beach. It's a mixed use with some retail, some apartments, amazing property. But the challenge was he was thinking that, oh, I'm good. I can pass it to my kids and I don't have any taxes. And I said, correct for capital gains tax if you get a stepped up basis, but your estate tax, you're going to pay, you know, 40%. And he goes, wow, I didn't realize that. And even the smartest, you know, really sophisticated real estate investors sometimes overlook the different taxes. And so that's something you want to make sure you're aware of when you're looking at any of these strategies.
Now, are we talking strictly about sheltering things that are subject to capital gains treatment, or are there other shelters? So, for example, let's say you're trading in land and you have that might be subject to ordinary business income. Does the DST help you there at all or not?
That's a great point. So the 1031 exchange is limited to long-term capital gains tax, which is defined as owning an asset for 1 year or greater, right? And so the land deal actually I was referring to for a client of mine in Texas, he did two $37 million land exits. And he did exactly what you're talking about, Victor, where he tied the land up and he actually didn't close on the land. He tied it up for 6 months, put a large non-refundable deposit up front, where he bought some time, then he was able to go to the city and work to improve and get things moved through. And so he would have been hit with what's called ordinary income tax because it's less than 1 year. But instead, he used the deferred sales trust to not only to defer that, to move all of the open ordinary income tax, which was not even 1031 eligible, let alone for all the other reasons. So yes, it does work for short term. It does work for long term. It works for C-Corps, S-Corps, LLCs. Partnerships can separate. It can save a failing 1031 exchange in case you're at an accommodator, as long as you're working with an accommodator who will accommodate, which is another topic as well. It works for cryptocurrency. It works for public or private stock. And so at primary homes, whereas the 1031 is so narrow, it only works for investment real estate that you've held for more than 1 year.
Fascinating. Well, Brett, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Yeah, you can go to capitalgainstaxsolutions.com and you can also check out our new book that just came out. It's actually on Amazon today as we're recording this. This is April the 20th. It's tax season. We came out with the book, our first book called Building a Capital Gains Tax Exit Plan. And I truly believe it'll give you an opportunity to build an ideal wealth plan when exiting any asset of any kind, You need to have at least $1 million net proceeds, $1 million gain. It needs to be large enough to qualify. But if you have that, it unlocks, I think, some amazing freedoms that the 1031 just does not. We have some great guests in the book, like Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank and other multifamily syndicators and operators and financial advisors. And so check out the book, Building a Capital Gains Tax Exit Plan. And if we can be of any service to you, go to capitalgainstaxsolutions.com. Love the opportunity to work with you.
Fabulous. Well, Brett, always great to catch up. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Brett at capitalgainstaxsolutions.com. The link will be in the show notes. And get a copy of his brand new book. I'm actually going to go get a copy myself. I'm actually very excited to read it. So thank you, Brett. And in the meantime, for the listeners at home, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.